I have at home a wonderful Bible. It's called a parallel Bible. And if you don't have one, it's a Bible where all of the stories are laid out together. You can compare the life of Jesus without flipping back and forth between all the Gospels. And let me tell you, the story I just read is one more that makes no sense. When you put all of the facts side by side, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But then again, why should it? After all, the disciples never did make much sense. You know, sometimes one has to wonder why, out of all the available possibilities that Jesus had, why did he pick those particular 12? I mean, let's face it, they weren't exactly the brightest Crayolas in the box. Remember how they reacted when Jesus told them that they were going to travel to Jerusalem, and while they were there, he would be denied, arrested, tried, and crucified. Now, one would think that would be disturbing news, right? But he no sooner got those words out of his mouth that James and John were arguing about which one was going to get to sit at his right hand, and it was another one of those opportunities for Peter to pull him aside and say, "You don't know what you're talking about, so be quiet." And then, one of my favorite stories, Jesus is saying, "I'm going to have to go ahead of you. But don't worry. I'm going to prepare a place for you, and you will know how to get to me." Without stopping to think who Jesus was, and what lessons he had been teaching them for almost 3 years now, Thomas looks at him and says, "How do we know where you're going if you don't tell us?" Even Jesus had a hard time believing that anyone could be that dense. Read his reply. Now, one would think that after witnessing the crucifixion and the resurrection, the disciples would finally be in a position to understand. The facts tell us differently. We learn that even after seeing the risen Lord with their own eyes, hearing them with his own ears, and touching them with their own hands, not once but twice, they still don't get it. According to the Gospel of Luke, Jesus told them to stay in the city, to stay in Jerusalem, until they had been given the gift of the Holy Spirit. So what did Peter do? Well, he waited a while. But then the waiting turned from hours to days and the days to weeks, and he finally decided he'd had enough, and he took matters into his own hands. He left the city and headed for Galilee. Galilee. It was the place that had all begun almost 3 years before. It was there that Jesus had called them. One morning, after a bad fishing experience, he told Peter to follow him, and he would help him fish for people. Galilee. It was the place that Peter felt the most comfortable. His family was there. The business that he had walked away from. So Peter left the life he had been called to return to the one that he had had. But it didn't work. He said, "I'm going fishing." And the six that had followed him to Galilee said, "Well, we'll go with you." And after a night of hard work, these once great fishermen had absolutely nothing to show for it. The sun was coming up, and they had even failed at this job. And so their spirits, their boats, and their lives were empty. And just as their discouragement and frustration reached its peak, Jesus appeared on the beach. "Children," he cried out, "you have no fish. Throw your nets on the right side of the boat and you'll catch something." Now, it made no sense. If there were fish on the right side of the boat, wouldn't there have been fish on the left side of the boat? We're talking nets here, not lines. But maybe there was something about that voice that they remembered. And so they did as he said. And the catch was so great that the nets almost broke. Friends, it had been almost 3 years since Jesus had called the same men from their boats with the promise of teaching them to fish for people. For 3 years, he tried to do just that. And yet it wasn't until that morning, standing on the beach, that Jesus faced his biggest challenge. Here were seven of his strongest disciples, and they had no fish. They had nothing. They had no one. They were so disillusioned and brokenhearted, they didn't have the strength, the courage, or even the luck to catch anything or anyone. Now, how do you think Jesus felt? After everything he had done, the sacrifices he'd made, the abuse that he had taken, the death that he had suffered, and his disciples had no fish. They weren't where they were supposed to be. They couldn't do what they had been called to do. Did Jesus stand there that day and wonder, is this all there is? Was he disappointed and hurt? Or maybe he was concerned and worried. But there was one thing he wasn't. He wasn't angry. While the disciples were obviously having a difficult time understanding and believing and acting on the lessons he had taught them, even though by every appearance they were total and utter failures, Jesus wasn't angry. Instead, as he stood there on the beach and he watched those disciples in that boat, he was so overcome with love and compassion. He simply told them one more time what they needed to do to be successful. And when they responded to his instructions, when they finally had a moment of success, he had one more request. He said, "Bring me some of your catch." The fish were already cooking, but Jesus said, "Give me some of what you have." You see, he loves us so much that he will take what we bring, what little bit we have, and transform it into something that will sustain us and delight us. Christians, look at everything he's done for us. The sacrifices, the gifts, the forgiveness that has been ours, the blessings that we have received, the love that surrounds us. Look at everything that he has done for us. But you know what is so tragic about this story? Do you know what really hurts? It's not that we go off in directions that we shouldn't go. It's not that sometimes we're failures and that we forget what he's taught us. What is tragic is that while we're standing there in his midst, he looks at us and he says, "Do you love me?" Do you love me? Simon, son of John, do you love me? Kathleen, child of Kenneth, do you love me? Michael, son of Wit, do you love me? Bev, child of Jerome, do you love me? Do we? Do we love him? And if we love him, how do we show it? What difference does it make in our lives and the lives of others? If we love him, shouldn't it show every step we take, every word we speak, every action we have? And in those moments when we're discouraged and unsure, do we love him enough to give him what little bit we have and trust that in his hands, a miracle will happen? And it will, if only you love him. Do you love him? Do you really love him? To God.